My name is Joey Adams. I'm part of the teaching team here at Lift Church. I'm really excited to dive into the Word of God today. We just wrapped up an amazing end time series. And so if you've been absent over the past couple of weeks, I'm going to encourage you, go back, go online, check out that series. It's phenomenal. But we're moving forward in a new series. And so the teaching team got together and thought, where do we go next? And we came up with this concept of faith in chaos. How do we live in faith? How do we exercise faith in chaos? How many of you can say that 2020 has been a year of chaos? That's just a given at this point, right? Well, how do we live in this moment? And so what we decided to do is we've decided to dive into some biblical characters, dive into some stories from the Bible, and see how they were living in chaos. And so today, we're going to be in 1 Samuel 24. If you want to open up your Bible or pick it up on your phone, we are going to look at a situation that David finds himself in. Now, I want to encourage you that more than just reading along in a text or thinking of going from verse to verse, I want to encourage you today to use your imagination. I want you to place yourself in this story. I want you to think about what's going on. In fact, if 1 Samuel 24 was a movie, I think it would begin like this. You would think of David's men. There's about 400 to 600 in a cave, and they're surrounded by Saul's army of about 3,000. They're fearful, they're scared, they're nervous. In my mind, it's raining and thundering, sort of like this. Are you with me? Great job, tech team. They're nervous, they're scared. Honestly, they're asking themselves this question: how did we end up here? How did we end up here? And we find ourselves asking that in seasons of chaos. How did I end up here? I would like to share a story with you about my life, and I'm actually going to continue this story through the sermon as it connects with the story we're reading. And I'm kind of nervous because I have my family here and my in-laws here. So before we get started, please know I grew up, all right? I've changed since last year. When I was about 17, I was new. I had just gotten my license. I think I was at my friend's house, and it was about 2 a.m., which is how any bad story begins, right? My parents told me nothing good happens after midnight, correct? And you were right. It's about 2 a.m. I'm hanging out with my buddies, and we're bored. We don't know what to do. We've played video games. And this brilliant idea comes to our mind. Let's hop in Joey's car and drive to Amish country. I don't know why we thought that would be cool. I don't know why we thought that would be interesting. You see, I grew up in Indiana, and about two towns from me was Amish country, or so we believed. And we thought, let's drive out there and see what happens. So all my friends hop in the car with me. I'm driving, and we just take off on these back roads of Indiana, trying to get lost, trying to just see where we can end up. Well, we end up in no man's land. I have no idea where we're at. There's fields on both sides and a curvy road. And I think, man, I bet I could drift my 96 Taurus really well around these curves. So I, sure enough, I start taking these curves a little harder at a time, a little harder at a time. And you know how when buddies are together, you guys just act up and things can get crazy real quick. Well, we go around a turn, and my buddy, who will remain nameless because he's still a friend to this day, grabs the wheel and yanks it. And so we flip right, and I overcorrect as hard as I can, which is a mistake, but we go left, and all of a sudden, my Taurus is spinning out into the fields. We hit a ditch, airbags go off, horns blazing, and I ask myself, how did I end up here? And I'm sure my friends are asking us the same question. How did we end up here? I'm going to pause before I continue that story because I know that David and his men have to be thinking the same question. How did we end up here? If you remember, David originally was running away from Saul because Saul was trying to kill him. Saul was actually throwing spears, causing mayhem, and forced David to leave. So David goes into hiding, and eventually people of misery, people who are downtrodden, come to David for leadership, and they begin organizing, and they believe in something. They start having this hope. They start having this encouragement that David's going to lead us, that David, who is the promised king, is going to make it through this situation somehow. Well, all of a sudden, they're in a cave, surrounded by 3,000 people, asking themselves, how did I end up here? And the first thing I want us to draw from this story is this, is that in moments of chaos, we have to be aware of what's happening around us. It's not bad to be aware of the climate or what's happening in our day. It's not bad to be aware of what's happening in the church. I think as humans, we're actually naturally inclined to sort of be self-aware or socially conscious of what's happening around us. We want to be aware because we have this desire to act. And before we step forward into how David acts in this chaos, I just want to speak to him a minute about being socially aware, because I feel like if we're not careful, instead of being socially aware, we can actually project what we wish to be true instead of actually seeing what's going on. And I think we need to just be careful when we look at what's going on around us, not to be scared or not to ignore it, because as Christians, sometimes I think we fall into this trap of, if I'm aware of the chaos, if I acknowledge the chaos, I'm losing faith in God. And we can actually fall into this trap that I don't want to see the bad because I want to be good. I want to have faith in God. But even scripture says that before you go into discipleship, count the cost. Be aware before you start moving forward. In this moment of chaos, our goal, faith in chaos, is to move past it. The goal of this series is to find out how biblical characters moved through chaos. And we're going to get to that point, but David would have been a fool to just ignore Saul's army around him. David would have been a fool to just say, you know what, God's here, God's good. Let's just go out and say hey to that army because it'll all be good. David would not have done that. When we move forward in our lives, it's okay to be aware of the chaos and what's going on around us. Do you think God doesn't know? Like, do you think you're going to upset God by bringing him some news that you're dealing with and he's gonna be like, I had no idea. Thank you for letting me know. God is aware, and God is a relational God. When you're aware of the chaos, your prayers become powerful and intimate and specific. God isn't scared of the specifics of your situation. When you go into prayer, God is not scared of the specifics of your situation. But we come to this moment, right? We're gonna move on in the story because chaos can cause confusion. And so as we move forward in the story, David is aware that Saul's army is surrounding him. The men are nervous, they're anxious, they're wondering what's gonna happen. Are they gonna come into the mountain? And lo and behold, Saul starts creeping forward to the very cave that they are in. Saul starts moving forward. And I have to believe the men are thinking two things. One, we either need to back up, move, and get away because Saul is aware of what's happening. Or two, and you'll see, can we use this to our advantage? What's happening here? Do we need to stay and make a decision? And Saul begins coming into the cave that they're at. And David and his men are nervous, they're anxious, and all of a sudden, they realize that Saul was not there to kill them or attack them. In fact, you could say this, David's men weren't the only ones relieved in that moment. Thank you, thank you. Did it land? Read 1 Samuel 24. And you bring up another story that has to deal with a man. That was good. I'm still on it. David's men realize Saul's going in there to use the restroom, and they begin egging David on in this moment. In fact, I want to look at what they say, because Saul's in there, he's vulnerable, and then David's men turn to him. Starting in verse 4, they say, Here is the day which the Lord said to you, behold, I will give your enemy into your hand, and you shall do to him as that shall seem good to you. David, here comes Saul, and the Lord said, here comes your enemy, do to him what you please. And David in this moment cuts the robe and realizes he made a mistake, realizes he messed up. So in this moment of confusion and chaos, we've asked ourselves, how did I end up here? The next question we want to ask ourselves is, why did I do that? Back to my story. I had spun my car out. We were all okay. Everyone was fine. We got back in the car, and I thought, I got to get this thing back to my friend's house. I had two thoughts. I have to get this back to my friend's house, and I somehow have to fix my car to where my parents won't know I wrecked it, right? I was in chaos, and I was in confusion. Somehow, we get this car back to my friend's house. Now, it's about 4 a.m. It's dark outside. I can't really see the car. I do know that the airbags went off. I'm 17, and I think, how do I make sure that my parents don't see that my airbags went off? So I didn't cut a robe, but I did cut the airbags out of my car. I cut them out, and then I duct taped the steering wheel and the glove compartment. And in my 17-year-old mind, I thought, this is the most brilliant thing anyone's ever done in their lives. There is no way they'll know I wrecked this car. I get back to my house, and I wake up to my dad knocking on my bedroom door. And he says, anything happened last night? No, Dad. Knowing the airbag thing fooled him. He said, will you come out with me? Check on your car. I said, okay. Just playing it cool. We walk out, and now it's daylight. It's the first time I've seen my car in the daylight. There's no bumper. There's barely a front to the car. And he says, come check this out. And he reaches up underneath, and he will tell you, literally pulled out an acre of dirt from the bottom of my car that was still piled and pushed in. I was this close. I was this close to getting away with it. But we have to ask ourselves in chaos and confusion, why would I do that? And here's the thing that I want to relate to David's men. I understand David's men because they were aware of the promise that David would be king. They're aware of this promise. And so when Saul comes into the cave, he has a grand opportunity to kill Saul and take the throne for himself. He can do this. And then they say specifically, the Lord said, and they say this to him, the Lord said, your enemy's coming. You can do to him as you please. Here's the problem with that statement. Either it's not recorded that anyone actually told David that, or they heard that promise earlier and they misapplied it to this situation. In moments of chaos and confusion, you ever have someone walk up to you and say, God told me to tell you? That's like laying the gauntlet down, just the first sentence. How is anyone supposed to come back from that? God told me to tell you something. I want to just speak to that sentence real quick. When we have a moment where God speaks to us, and it is genuine, and it's, I have to share this with somebody, never forget the two commandments that Jesus says, love God and love others. If you have a moment where you believe God is telling you to tell something to somebody, remember that you need to still love them the way God loves them. And there might be a way of going about that without just walking up to them or sending them a message on Facebook saying, God told me to tell you so-and-so. I'm learning a lot in marriage, right? That is not a sentence you say to your wife or husband. In fact, my wife told me this. I think it was day one of marriage. It might have been day one of dating. I don't know. She told me very early. She said, Joey, I know people, you know, in the ministry, they do this and do that. If God ever tells you to tell me we're doing something, he better tell me first. because we're not going anywhere. And you know what? I really don't doubt that he would tell her something first. He talks to her way more than me, which I'm kind of jealous of. But listen, God cares for us as a family and a community. If God is speaking to us to share with one another, he's also encouraging us to build one another up in love, right? And so there's a way to go about this communication. But David's men say to him, go ahead, fulfill the promise of God by taking Saul's life into your own hands. And David is tempted. David is tempted to do this because chaos can confuse us. Chaos can cause us to step out and do things we didn't mean to do. And this isn't the only story of David that's relatable, right? We relate to these biblical characters because we're imperfect humans as well. We face chaos, and there are times we do dumb things. There are times we do dumb things trying to fulfill the promise of God in our lives, even with good intentions. David was promised the kingdom. The Bible is full of promises. John 10:10 says, you are promised abundant life. Psalm says, you're promised a life of joy. These things are promised to you. And my parents are looking at me going, what about my kids? How is that promise fulfilled? That promise comes because God has promised it to you, and it will come in God's timing, not because you tried to take it into your own hands and get there by doing shortcuts or being disobedient. You see, trying to get to God's promises by being disobedient is still disobedience. Trying to cut corners by being disobedient, trying to get ahead or trying to get to these fulfillments that God has promised you by being disobedient is still disobedience. Romans 12:21 says this, don't overcome evil with evil. Even if somebody has wronged you, David, by all his men's rights, by all his men's minds, had the right to take out Saul. If you knew what Saul had done to me, if you knew what was happening, David, this is set up on a tee for you to home run, man. But this is an early example, and it's a biblical theme where it's repeated over and over. Don't overcome evil with evil. Don't think that you can get to God's promises by evil acts. God has promises for you, and that's what we're gonna see in this story, but they're gonna come at God's timing. So we come to this moment, we're aware of what's going on around us. We ask ourselves, how did I end up here? Then we might make a mistake and we ask ourselves, why would I do that? But we come finally to an understanding in the chaos. That's what I love about this story. Starting in verse 7, it begins like this. David persuaded his men with these words. He's cut the rope, he's made the mistake, he's dealt with it. He understands he was disobedient. And then he persuades the men with these words and did not permit them to attack Saul. So Saul rose up and left the cave and went on his way. Afterward, David also arose, went out of the cave and called after Saul. My Lord King, this language, by the way, if you just know the story and the tension between David and Saul and what just happened, listen to what David says to him. My Lord King. And when Saul looked behind him, David bowed with his face to the earth and paid homage. And David said to Saul, why do you listen to the words of men who say, behold, David seeks your harm. Behold, this day your eyes have seen how the Lord gave you today into my hand in the cave. And some told me to kill you, but I spared you. I said, I will not put my hand against the Lord, for he is the Lord's anointed. See, my father, see the corner of your robe in my hand. For by the fact that I cut off the corner of your robe and did not kill you, you may know and see that there is no wrong or treason in my hands. I have not sinned against you, though you hunt my life to take it. May the Lord judge between me and you. May the Lord avenge me against you, but my hand shall not be against you. As the proverb of the ancient says, out of the wicked comes wickedness, but my hand will not be against you. There are moments in chaos where we make mistakes. But please never get in the habit of letting the enemy tell you because you made a mistake, God is done with you. If there's anything the Bible teaches us, it is that imperfect human beings are constantly God's vessels to continue the story of salvation to generations. And this is what I want to hit home on, because faith in chaos is not easy, it's not linear, it's not one way. It's up and down. It's times where we do things that are really great, and there's times where we mess up. But God is not done using you. In fact, I think that as you go through chaos and you gain these experiences, you come to a realization that David has where he says, you know what? I'm trusting in the promises of God, and it's not my hand that's going to bring them to fulfillment, but I'm going to wait and trust on the Lord Almighty who will bring them to fruition. And that's where we come to in these moments of chaos. Even in 2020, with all the things happening around us, I know there are things that God has promised you, and you're looking at certain situations, you're looking at your bank accounts, you're looking at politics, you're looking at what is happening in the church, and you're going, God, how can your promises be fulfilled? I have to do something. And God in this story is saying, let me handle it. I still got this. You don't need to try and rush into something and be disobedient in the process. Trust in my promises. Look how, David, some of this stuff just, when I read the Bible and I get lost in these narratives, I can't imagine David, who had this chance to kill Saul, comes to this realization that it's not up to me, comes down, and this is what he does. He bows down onto the ground. And he, in a minute, gives Saul a chance to take the knife and go against him. He's vulnerable in this moment. He's honoring in this moment. He's the exact opposite of what Saul thinks his enemies should be like, which we're gonna get to in a second. David bows down, and by the way, there could be a whole sermon on his phrase, the Lord's anointed. Calling Saul the Lord's anointed is amazing, and I'm begging you, we can't handle it in a sermon. If you want to do a study, if you want to dive into something, think through why David, even in this moment, calls Saul the Lord's anointed. You have to remember, God placed Saul into kingship. God still brought that about, and that's why I love the Old Testament, is they're figuring all this stuff out, but David says, you are the Lord's anointed, and then he even goes one step further in his mercy, and please hear this, because if you are dealing with drama between people, hear David's heart in this moment. I didn't realize this till I was studying for this sermon, but he not only bows down and pays homage to Saul, he gives Saul an out. He gives Saul an out. Look at what he says. Why do you listen to your men, Saul? Why do you listen to everyone around you who says they want to kill me? You're better than that. I know that's not you. Why do you do that? And even in a moment where Saul is short on men, or David is short on men, David is vulnerable. David says, I'm not trying to trap Saul. I'm not trying to kill Saul. I want to fix this, and I'm offering grace. Even by saying, Saul, I'm not going to attack your character in this moment. I'm going to give you an out and say, why are you even listening to other people? Saul, I know that's not you. Why? And then we have to look at Saul's response. Someone who had just received this mercy, someone who had just received this grace, someone who was the cause of chaos, looking at somebody who spared their life and stepped forward in this moment, starting in verse 14, David continues, he finishes up by saying, after whom has the king of Israel come out to? After whom do you pursue? A dead dog? A flea? May the Lord judge between me and you and give sentence and plead my case and deliver me from your hands. As soon as David finished speaking these words to Saul, he said, and listen to these words carefully, because it was a man who was seeking to kill. This man has thrown spears at David. This man left a couple chapters earlier. He was hunting David. Philistines attacked. He went to fight off the Philistines and then pursue David again, came back to kill David. He says, "Is this your voice, my son David?" Saul lifted up his voice and wept. He said to David, "You are more righteous than I, for you have repaid me good, whereas I have repaid you evil. And you have declared this day how you have dealt with me, and that you did not kill me when the Lord put me into your hands. For if a man finds his enemy, will he let him go away safe? So may the Lord reward you with good for what you have done." And then he says something very powerful. He says, "And now behold, I know that you shall surely be king, and that the kingdom of Israel shall be established in your hand. So much so, swear to me in this moment that you will not destroy my name out of my father's house." And David swore this to Saul, and then Saul went home, but David and his men went up to the stronghold. David, in a moment, has a chance to take Saul's life. He actually cuts the robe and feels really guilty about doing it. He comes out and says, "Saul, the Lord offered you into my hands today, but I showed you mercy." And Saul weeps and says, "You are more righteous than I." Chapter 22, I believe, Jonathan is the first one to tell David, "Surely you will reign and I'll be at your right hand." And two chapters later, Saul, who's out to kill David, says, "Surely the Lord will give you this kingdom." We all know that David went on to become king of Israel. I believe it's in 2 Samuel 1 or at the end of 1 Samuel. It is a powerful story when David again is hearing of battle and a man runs to him and says, "David, David, there was a battle and Saul died. Congratulations, man, you're going to be king." And David loses it and weeps. You can come up. He says, "Why do you think this is good news to me? Why do you think I would be happy to see the Lord's anointed die? Why do you think that even though I'm promoted to kingship, I'm happy that it came about at a fellow Israelite dying?" See, Saul, tribe of Benjamin, David, tribe of Judah, brothers, same family. David says, what makes you happy that Israel lost a battle and their king just died?" He weeps almost to the point where his men go, "Man, David, you better get it together. Like, we really don't know what to do. We're mourning and we're sad." We see David then step into the kingdom. It's not an easy road. It's not given to him instantly. But God's promise is fulfilled that, "David, you will reign, that your house will be built and it shall not fall." All the way to a man named Jesus, who comes from the same line, who looks at others and says, "Don't repay evil with evil. Don't be disobedient trying to rush the promises of God in your life." Micah is going to come up in a second, and at the end of sermons, we have this application moment. But before he gets into that, and maybe you can help lead this Micah, whenever we hear a sermon, we always think, "All right, what do I do next? How do I take this? What do I do next? Where do I go? Come on, tell me what to do. What do I do?" Wait. Be patient and know that God is working in your life. He sees you. And I know you're tempted to reach out and grab something, but God is a fulfiller of promises in his time. And I am fully confident that you will see your promises fulfilled by God.
We hope you've enjoyed this teaching by Pastor Joey, and thank you for your continued support in this ministry. Your prayers and financial support make this podcast possible. For more information about our church and other ministries, please visit us online at liftchurch.com.